Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we travel to the Philippines. This is a country that was conquered by Spain, given to the United States, and then gained its freedom in 1946. This is really an archipelago. A long stretch of islands. There are more than 7,000 of them. The world's largest pearl was discovered here. Known as the Pearl of Lao Tzu or Pearl of Allah, it weighs 14 pounds and is over 9 inches in diameter. It's currently valued at $40 million. The world's most valuable shell comes from these islands. It is the Conus Gloriamus and recently one sold for over $5,000. The Philippines has the highest rate of discovery of new animal species on the planet. 15 new species of mammals were discovered here in just the last 10 years. And there is one other thing to remember about the Philippines. They are home to some of the largest crocodiles on Earth. For information on the internet about the Philippines for children, I suggest www.factretriever.com/Philippines-facts. Our first story is about a beautiful maiden, but as so much magic is in here that it truly defies description. You'll hear about the carabao, which is a Philippine water buffalo, a woman who changes into oil, and betel nuts who can walk and talk and force people into doing all kinds of things. There are many legends about this woman, her family, her children. She is a vital part of the Philippine legends. So I have picked just one from the many stories that I discovered. Here is Apanabulinayan. The most beautiful girl in all the world was Apanabulinayan of Naipangan. Many young men had come to her brother, Apanabulagan, to ask for her hand in marriage, but he had refused them all, for he awaited one who possessed great power. Then it happened that the fame of her beauty spread over all the world, till it reached even to Addison, and in that place there lived a man of great power named Gawigawan. Now Gawigawan, who was a handsome man, had sought among all the pretty girls, but never, until he heard of the great beauty of Apanabulinayan, had he found one whom he wished to wed. Then he determined that she should be his wife, and he begged his mother to help him win her. So Dinawagan, the mother of Gawigawan, took her hat, which looked like a sunbeam, and set out at once for Naipangan, and when she arrived there, she was greeted by Ibang, the mother of the lovely maiden, who presently began to prepare food for them. She put the pot over the fire, and when the water boiled, she broke up a stick and threw the pieces into the pot, and immediately they became fish. Then she brought Basi in a large jar. They ate and drank together, and after they had finished the meal, Dinawagan told Apanabulagan of her son's wishes, and asked if he was willing that his sister should marry Gawigawan. Apanabulagan, who had heard of the power of the suitor, at once gave his consent, and Dinawagan departed for home, leaving a gold cup as an engagement present. Now, the people of Naipangan wanted a great price for this girl who was so beautiful, and the men of the two towns debated for a long time before they could come to an agreement. Finally, however, it was decided that Gawigawan should fill the spirit house 18 times with valuable things, and when he had done this, they were all satisfied. For 3 months, the people remained here feasting and dancing, and then early one morning, they took Apanabulinayan to her new home in Addison. Now, during all this time, Apanabulinayan had kept her face covered so that she had never seen her husband, for although he was a handsome man, one of the pretty girls who was jealous of the bride had told her that he had three noses, and she was afraid to look at him. After her people had all returned to their homes, she grew very unhappy and when her mother-in-law commanded her to cook, she had to feel her way around, for she would not uncover her face. Finally, she became so sad that she determined to run away. One night, when all were asleep, she used magical power and changed herself into oil. Then she slid through the bamboo floor and made her escape without anyone seeing her. On and on she went until she came to the middle of the jungle, and then she met a wild rooster who asked her where she was going. "I am running away from my husband," replied Aponibalanayan, "for he has three noses, and I do not want to live with him."
"Oh," said the rooster, "some crazy person must have told you that. Do not believe it. Gobigawan is a handsome man, for I have often seen him when he comes here to snare chickens."
But Aponibalanayan paid no heed to the rooster, and so she went on until she reached a big tree where perched a monkey, and he also asked where she was going.
"I am running away from my husband," answered the girl, "for he has three noses, and I do not want to live with him."
"Oh, do not believe that," said the monkey. "Someone who told you that must have wanted to marry him herself, for he is a handsome man."
She kept running on until she came to a crocodile napping beside the ocean. He gave her a big, lazy grin and asked her why she was running and where was she going.
"I am running away from my husband," answered the girl, "for he has three noses, and I do not want to live with him."
The crocodile just smiled and said, "Then why don't you marry me? I don't have three noses, just one long one and lots of teeth, the better to eat you with." The girl gasped and kept running until she came to the ocean, and then, as she could go no farther, she sat down to rest. As she sat there pondering what she should do, a carabao came along, and thinking that she would ride a while, she climbed up on its back. No sooner had she done so than the animal plunged into the water and swam with her until they reached the other side of the great ocean. There they came to a very large orange tree, and the carabao told her to eat some of the luscious fruit while he fed on the grass nearby. As soon as he had left her, though, he ran straight to his master, Kadaidawen, and told him of the beautiful girl. Kadaidawen was very much interested and quickly combed his hair and oiled it, put on his striped coat and belt, and went with the carabao to the orange tree. Aponibalanayan, looking down from her place in the tree, was surprised to see a man coming with her friend, the carabao, but as they drew near, she began talking with him, and soon they became acquainted. Before long, Kadaidawen had persuaded the girl to become his wife, and he took her to his home. From that time, every night his house looked as if it was on fire because of the beauty of his bride. After they had been married for some time, Kadaidawen and Aponibalanayan decided to make a ceremony for the spirits, so they called the magic betel nuts and oiled them and said to them, "Go to all the towns and invite our relatives to come to the ceremony which we shall make. If they do not want to come, then grow on their knees until they are willing to attend." So the betel nuts started in different directions, and one went to Aponibalagan in Nalpongan and said, "Kadaidawen is making a ceremony for the spirits, and I have come to summon you to attend." "We cannot go," said Aponibalagan, "for we are searching for my sister who is lost."
"You must come," replied the betel nut, "or I shall grow on your knee."
"Grow on my pig," answered Aponibalagan. So the betel nut went on to the pig's back and grew into a tall tree, and it became so heavy that the pig could not carry it, but squealed all the time. Then Aponibalagan, seeing that he must obey, said to the betel nut, "Get off my pig, and we will go."
As soon as they reached the town, the dancing began, and while Gobigawan, her rightful husband, who had also been invited to the festivities, was dancing with Aponibalanayan, he seized her. Kadaidawen, who saw this, was so angry that he threw his spear and killed Gobigawan. Then Aponibalanayan escaped and ran into the house, and her husband brought his victim back to life and asked him why he had seized the wife of his host. Gobigawan explained that she was his wife who had been lost, and the people were very much surprised, for they had not recognized her at first. Then all the people discussed what should be done to bring peace between the two men, and it was finally decided that Kadaidawen must pay both Aponibalagan and Gobigawan the price that was first demanded for the beautiful girl. After this was done, all were happy, and the guardian spirit of Kayadawan gave them a golden house in which to live. Happily together and truly in love, for she had at last found her spiritual soulmate in Kayadawan, the two of them lived in great joy and harmony for the rest of their lives. This next story is from the Tinguian tribe, which is an ancient group of people who have lived in the Philippines for as long as anyone can remember. It has a somewhat whimsical conclusion, basically explaining why a healer can't heal everyone who comes to her. Here is how the Tinguian learned to plant. In the very old times, the Tinguian did not know how to plant and harvest as they now do. For food, they had only the things that grew in the forests and fish from the streams. Neither did they know how to cure people who became ill or were injured by evil spirits, and many died who might otherwise have lived. Then Kadoklan, the great spirit who lives in the sky, saw that the people often were hungry and sick, and he sent one of his servants, Kabunian, to the earth to teach them many things, and it happened this way. Dayapan, a woman who lived in Kalang, had been sick for 7 years. One day, when she went to the spring to bathe, there entered her body a spirit who had rice and sugar cane with him, and he said to her, "Dayapan, take these to your home and plant them in the ground, and after a while they will grow large enough to reap. Then, when they are ripe, build a granary to put the rice in until you shall need it, and a sugar press to crush the cane. And when these are finished, make the ceremony sayong, and you will be well." Dayapan was filled with the wonder at these strange things, but she took the rice and the sugar cane and went home as she was recommended. While she was trying to plant them in the ground, the spirit again entered her body and showed her just what to do. Since then, the Tinguian have planted crops every year, and because they do as Kabunian taught the woman, they have plenty to eat. When Dayapan had reaped the first rice and cane, she began to make the ceremony, sayung, and the spirit came again and directed her. And when it was finished and she was cured, he told her to take a dog and a cock and go to bathe in the river as a sign that the ceremony was finished. So she went to the river and tied the dog and the cock near the water. But while she was bathing, the dog ate the cock. Dayapan wept bitterly at this and waited a long time for Kabunian. And when at last he came, he said, "If the dog had not killed the cock, no person would die when you make this ceremony, but this is a sign, and now some will die and some will get well." Dayapan called all the people together and told them the things that the spirit had taught her, and they could see that she had been made well. After that, when people became ill, they called Dayapan to treat them, and it was as the spirit had said. Some died, and others were made well. If you've ever seen a land crab, you won't forget it. They are just like the Dungeness crabs in our Oregon oceans, except perhaps a little bigger. They are red, and they walk and live on land. You have to be careful not to drive over them, as sometimes in the early morning, they leave their little crannies in the rocks and crevices of various village houses and march across the road to the beach. This story is about the Battle of the Crabs. One day, the land crabs had a meeting, and one of them said, "What shall we do with the waves? They sing so loudly all the time that we cannot possibly sleep." "Well," answered one of the oldest of the crabs, "I think we should make war on them." The others agreed to this, and it was decided that the next day, all the male crabs should get ready to fight the waves. They started for the sea, as agreed, when they met a shrimp.
"Where are you going, my friends?" asked the shrimp.
"We are going to fight the waves," answered the crabs, "for they make so much noise at night that we cannot sleep."
"I do not think you will succeed," said the shrimp, "for the waves are very strong and your legs are so weak that even your bodies bend almost to the ground when you walk," wherewith he laughed loudly.
This made the crabs very angry, and they pinched that poor shrimp until he promised to help them win the battle. Then they all went to the shore. But the crabs noticed that the eyes of the shrimp were set unlike their own, so they thought he must be wrong, and they laughed at him and said, "Friend shrimp, your face is turned the wrong way. What weapon have you to fight with the waves?"
"My weapon is a spear on my head," replied the shrimp, and just then he saw a big wave coming and ran away.
The crabs did not see it, however, for they were all looking toward the shore, and they were covered with water and drowned.
By and by, the wives of the crabs became worried because their husbands did not return, and they went down to the shore to see if they could help in the battle. No sooner had they reached the water, however, than the waves rushed over them and killed them. Soon after this, thousands of little crabs appeared near the shore, and the shrimp often visited them and told them of the sad fate of their parents. Even today, these little crabs can be seen on the shore, continually running back and forth. They seem to rush down to fight the waves, and then as their courage fails, they run back to the land where their forefathers lived. They neither live on dry land as their ancestors did, nor in the sea where the other crabs are, but on the beach where the waves wash over them at high tide and try to dash them to pieces. Many different countries and cultures have legends of the Great Flood. We probably know the one about Noah and the Ark the best, but this is the version from the Philippines, complete with a little of Adam and Eve's story thrown in for good measure. Here is the flood story. Once upon a time, when the world was flat and there were no mountains, there lived two brothers, sons of Lumawig, the Great Spirit. The brothers were fond of hunting, and since no mountains had formed, there was no good place to catch wild pig and deer, and the older brother said, "Let us cause water to flow over all the world and cover it, and then mountains will rise up." So they caused water to flow over all the earth, and when it was covered, they took the head basket of the town and set it for a trap. The brothers were very much pleased when they went to look at their trap, for they had caught not only many wild pigs and deer, but also many people. Now, Lumawig looked down from his place in the sky and saw that his sons had flooded the earth and that in all the world there was just one spot which was not covered. And he saw that all the people in the world had been drowned except one brother and sister who lived in Pokis. Then Lumawig descended and he called to the boy and girl saying, "Oh, you are still alive." "Yes," answered the boy, "we are still alive, but we are very cold." So Lumawig commanded his dog and deer to get fire for the boy and girl. The dog and the deer swam quickly away, but though Lumawig waited a long time, they did not return, and all the time the boy and girl were growing colder. Finally, Lumawig himself went after the dog and the deer, and when he reached them, he said, "Why are you so long in bringing the fire to Pokis? Get ready and come quickly while I watch you, for the boy and girl are very cold." Then the dog and the deer took the fire and started to swim through the flood, but when they had gone only a little way, the fire was put out. Lumawig commanded them to get more fire, and they did so, but they swam only a little way again when that of the deer went out, and that of the dog would have been extinguished also had not Lumawig got quickly to him and taken it. As soon as Lumawig reached Pokis, he built a big fire which warmed the brother and sister, and the water evaporated so that the world was as it was before, except that now there were mountains. The brother and sister married and had children, and thus there came to be many people on the earth. This next story explains why chickens and hawks are the way they are today. Here is The Hawk and the Hen. A hawk flying about in the sky one day decided that he would like to marry a hen, whom he often saw on earth. He flew down and searched until he found her, and then asked her to become his wife. She at once gave her consent, on the condition that he would wait until she could grow wings like his, so that she might also fly high. The hawk agreed to this and flew away, after giving her a ring as an engagement present and telling her to take good care of it. The hen was very proud of the ring and placed it around her neck. The next day, however, she met the cock, who looked at her in astonishment and said, "Where did you get that ring? Do you not know that you promised to be my wife? You must not wear the ring of anyone else. Throw it away." And the hen threw away the beautiful ring. Not long after this, the hawk came down bringing beautiful feathers to dress the hen. When she saw him coming, she was frightened and ran to hide behind the door. But the hawk called to her to come and see the beautiful dress he had brought her. The hen came out, and the hawk at once saw that the ring was gone. "Where is the ring I gave you?" he asked. "Why do you not wear it?" The hen was frightened and ashamed to tell the truth, so she answered, "Oh, sir, yesterday when I was walking in the garden, I met a large snake, and he frightened me so that I ran as fast as I could to the house.
Then I missed the ring, and I searched everywhere but could not find it.
The hawk looked sharply at the hen, and he knew that she was deceiving him. Then he said to her, I did not believe that you could behave so badly. When you have found the ring, I will come down again and make you my wife. But as a punishment for breaking your promise, you must always scratch the ground to look for the ring, and every chicken of yours that I find, I shall snatch away. Then he flew away, and ever since, all the hens throughout the world have been scratching to find the hawk's ring.
The next story mentions a bolo. This is a Philippine knife, something like a machete.
The monkey and the turtle.
A monkey looking very sad and dejected was walking along the bank of the river one day when he met a turtle.
How are you? Asked the turtle, noticing that he looked sad.
The monkey replied, Oh, my friend, I am very hungry. The squash of Mr. Farmer were all taken by the other monkeys, and now I'm about to die from want of food.
Do not be discouraged, said the turtle. Take a bolo and follow me, and we will steal some banana plants.
So they walked along together until they found some nice plants, which they dug up, and then they looked for a place to set them. Finally, the monkey climbed a tree and planted his in it, but as the turtle could not climb, he dug a hole in the ground and set his there. When their work was finished, they went away, planning what they should do with their crop. The monkey said,
When my tree bears fruit, I shall sell it and have a great deal of money.
And the turtle said,
When my tree bears fruit, I shall sell it and buy 3 pieces of cloth to wear in place of this cracked shell.
A few weeks later, they went back to the place to see their plants and found that that of the monkey was dead, for its roots had had no soil in the tree, but that of the turtle was tall and bearing fruit.
I will climb to the top so that we can get the fruit, said the monkey,
and he sprang up the tree, leaving the poor turtle on the ground alone.
Please give me some to eat, called the turtle,
but the monkey threw him only a green one and ate all the ripe ones himself. When he had eaten all the good bananas, the monkey stretched his arms around the tree and went to sleep. The turtle, seeing this, was very angry and considered how he might punish the thief. Having decided on a scheme, he gathered some sharp bamboo, which he stuck all around under the tree, and then he exclaimed,
Crocodile is coming! Crocodile is coming!
The monkey was so startled at the cry that he fell upon the sharp bamboo and was killed. Then the turtle, who really was a very nice fellow, decided he should take the dead monkey back to his family, who all lived in Monkey Town. He told them why he had caused their brother to fall on the bamboo. While the turtle thought it had been fair to punish the monkey, he hadn't meant for it to be killed. He had just thought the monkey would be scratched and learn a good lesson. But dead it was now, and there was nothing to do about it. The dead monkey's family were terribly angry. Then the monkeys tied up the poor turtle and carried him to their own home.
Let us take a hatchet, said one old monkey, and cut him into very small pieces.
But the turtle laughed and said, That is just what I like. I've been struck with a hatchet many times. Do you not see the black scars on my shell? Then one of the other monkeys said,
Let us throw him into the water.
At this, the turtle cried and begged them to spare his life, but they paid no heed to his pleadings and threw him into the water. He sank to the bottom, but very soon came up with a lobster. The monkeys were greatly surprised at this and begged him to tell them how to catch lobsters.
I tied one end of a string around my waist, said the turtle. To the other end of the string I tied a stone, so that I would sink.
The monkeys immediately tied strings around themselves, as the turtle said, and when all was ready, they plunged into the water, never to come up again. And to this day, monkeys do not like to eat meat, because they remember the ancient story, but they do still like bananas. They just make sure there are no bamboo stakes near any of the trees they climb. Our last tale is a cute one about dogs and cats. Here's Why Dogs Wag Their Tails. A rich man in a certain town once owned a dog and a cat, both of which were very useful to him. The dog had served his master for many years and had become so old that he had lost his teeth and was unable to fight anymore. But he was a good guide and companion to the cat, who was strong and cunning. The master had a daughter
who was attending school at a convent some distance from home, and very often he sent the dog and the cat with presents to the girl. One day, he called the faithful animals and bade them carry a magic ring to his daughter.
"You are strong and brave," he said to the cat. "You may carry the ring, but you must be careful not to drop it."
And to the dog he said,
"You must accompany the cat to guide her and keep her from harm."
They promised to do their best and started out. All went well until they came to a river. As there was neither bridge nor boat, there was no way to cross but to swim.
"Let me take the magic ring," said the dog, as they were about to plunge into the water.
"Oh, no," replied the cat. "The master gave it to me to carry, meow."
"But you cannot swim well," argued the dog. "I am strong and can take good care of it."
The cat refused to give up the ring until finally the dog threatened to kill her, and then she reluctantly gave it to him. The river was wide and the water so swift that they grew very tired, and just before they reached the opposite bank, the dog dropped the ring. They searched carefully but could not find it anywhere, and after a while, they turned back to tell their master of the sad loss. Just before reaching the house, however, the dog was so overcome with fear that he turned and ran away and never was seen again. The cat went on alone, and when the master saw her coming, he called out to know why she had returned so soon and what had become of her companion. The poor cat was frightened, but as well as she could, she explained how the ring had been lost and how the dog had run away. On hearing her story, the master was very angry and commanded that all his people should search for the dog and that it should be punished by having its tail cut off. He also ordered that all the dogs in the world should join in the search, and ever since, when one dog meets another, he says, "Are you the old dog that lost the magic ring? If so, your tail must be cut off." Then immediately each shows his teeth and wags his tail to prove that he is not the guilty one. Since then, too, cats have been afraid of water and will not swim across a river if they can avoid it. So, we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to South Africa and hear all about the amazing creatures that live there. This is where the great diamond mines of the world are located, and it is home to some of the most exotic animals on the planet. Thank you to our new sponsor, Anne McLean and Blue Pacific Realty. They are sponsoring Gima's Tales for Children. Anne and her dog, Ami, love listening to the stories. It's because of sponsors and listeners like you that KCIW can provide our community with quality programming. Thank you. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading.